Okay, so we're here. This is the 7th episode of The Catholic Attic, and we have our first guests.
Yes.
I am Mick Marania. I am Joseph and Brian's youngest brother, and I have with me here today
Veronica Rosales. I am his fiance.
And our sister, but not yet.
So,
and we're very excited.
Yeah, our first guests.
Mick and Veronica are getting married soon. It's coming up.
It is, less than 2 months.
Yeah, how is it? What are you thinking or feeling?
I think excited, ready to get it over with.
Yeah, we have our pre-Cana classes coming up at the beginning of April. And so we don't really know too much what to expect.
I guess for some reason I don't know why, I just had this impression that it was all tied in together with the RCIA.
No, it's separate. So we'll do that over 2 evenings, Thursday and Friday, and then a weekend, Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah.
It's a lot, though. That's a lot of time.
Yeah, it's a good... I think it's 2 or 3 hours Thursday, Friday, and then 8 hours Saturday and Sunday each day.
Wow. Is it at the same church?
It's not. It. I think it's through the Archdiocese of Washington, but it... Yeah. Serves the whole D.C. area.
Yeah, is that like a retreat center? Mm-hmm. Whereas our RCIA program is at a parish in College Park at Holy Redeemer.
What was your, Joseph, what was your pre-Cana preparation like?
Part of it was that Jen wasn't living here in Maryland when we did her pre-Cana. She was not yet in California, but she was already living and working in New York. And I was here, and initially I really wanted Father Hartley to officiate our wedding, but I don't know exactly what it was. I don't know if he was like hesitant or if he just was like, oh, I'm not sure, and you know, he had a lot of things, but he was very willing to invite us to the pre-Cana. It's like a weekend or maybe just one day that he was doing through Loyola, and so he could get us into the class. And it was just, I think it was just like a one day, like a really long, maybe like an 8 hour day. And it was just this, a typical, what I assume are just typical presentations. It was at the Timonium
campus.
The Timonium campus. Frankly, I don't remember too much about it. And at the same time, I wasn't really at a point in my life where I was very, that wasn't like a, honestly, it wasn't like a big priority. The wedding as a sacrament and event was important to me, but I just really wanted to just kind of get the pre-Cana requirement out of the way.
Yeah, for us, we did a weekend similar to what you guys are doing. We went on a Friday night and went all the way. We stayed overnight, 2 nights, and then it lasted until Sunday afternoon. And I guess partially because ours is fresher in mind. That was just 4 years ago, maybe a little bit longer when we did the pre-Cana, but it was really good. We, you know, it was designed so that there was, you know, there were certain ideas or talks that were presented that led to some kind of reflection. So then we had time for us as individuals to reflect, and then had time for us as a couple to talk about things and just sort of be on the same page. You know, it's probably some of the stuff that you guys already are doing just by the virtue of the fact that you're preparing for a wedding, but it's targeted to certain things that you might not normally talk about in the course of like a dinner conversation, you know, because they ask about things like, you know, how you envision raising your kids and, you know, how you envision relating to your in-laws, you know, and to your parents of your spouse, you know, would you consider moving in with your in-laws? Would you allow them to move in with you? Which, again, it's not like, you know, if you go out on a date just as a couple on like a Friday night, you're like, I have a question. Would you ever, you know, allow your in-laws to move in? You know, so it's just good to have that very conscious and dedicated time and space to talk about those things. So we loved it. We thought it was really good.
I have a friend that he's married, he's been married for several years, but he always said, it always threw everyone off because he had two things that were important to him. So he would always say it on like a first date. He's like, right off the bat, you have to know breastfeeding and homeschooling, it has to happen. You know, and, I mean, his wife now he's very happy with, and they do that. But that's for most people, I think that's not something that they usually talk about. But I know for us, we weren't at a place where, I mean, those, I feel like I'm learning a lot just from your experience, but we weren't at a place where we were even interested in, well, maybe just me. I wasn't interested in really thinking about that or talking about that. You know, we're just, the wedding itself seemed like, oh, this like this huge logistical thing. And I don't know, we just, I guess my maturity level at the time, I wasn't really ready for that.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, part of it is that there are several things that are going on in a wedding. Right. And obviously you guys are preparing all the stuff that brings the families together. And so you're managing, you know, your own relationships with your own parents and then relationships with the other's parents. And, you know, all, you have the groomsmen and the bridesmaids and all that. But, the pre-Cana, I think, ideally is sort of a chance for you to, number one, go back into yourself and sort of say, well, what are my own values and where is my own life going? And then to go back more particularly to your own relationship with God and, you know, where is God calling me? And then your own relationship with each other and then your relationship as a couple with God, which is sort of a, you know, if you have like your sort of how you relate to God on your own and then how you relate to each other, then you also have how you as a couple relate to God, which is in a way a third relationship then within your relationship. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So to have time then to focus on that, because, you know, that's not always front and center when you're mailing out invitations or, you know, looking for gifts for the bridesmaids or whatever it might be. Yeah.
Which that actually brings up an interesting point, because I feel like the fact that I've been doing RCIA as we've been kind of planning the wedding, I think that's already something we're thinking about, because Mick has kindly enough gone to RCIA with me.
Yeah.
So I feel like not only is it supportive for me, but I think it, you know, lets us have conversations in terms of how we relate to God and kind of what we think in terms of topics that we may discuss during RCIA or just in general questions we have for each other.
That must be nice to have that time. Is it once a week? Yeah, like some time where, I mean, I'm sure you guys talk afterwards, but even if you didn't talk or discuss anything afterwards, that you have that time together where you, frankly, I mean, for Jen and I, there's been lots of things that we've done in the past, like we've taken like a cooking class or something. Not that it didn't matter what we did, but it was what mattered more a lot of times was just the fact that we were together. And so the fact that you guys get to do something together, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think we definitely enjoy it. And I think it's, you know, again, just a testament of the fact that he's willing, especially even with something so personal as religious growth, that he's willing to kind of be there by my side.
So, Mick, what do you think about it? Just because I'm extremely curious what your, not just your thoughts, but, you know, I guess vicariously, I'm curious to see, to hear about just your impression of it or your experience taking classes.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I've always felt a little, I don't know if self-conscious is the right word, but just, I'll say self-conscious for now, of what Veronica thinks of our faith, just because growing up around here and going to Loyola and even hanging out with a lot of Filipino people in college, it's most of the people I've been really close to have been Catholic, so my faith has, I've never considered my faith as anything unusual or even that different. I guess after college and meeting Veronica, who was raised Adventist, and then even living around the DC area, I guess I just don't know that many Catholic people in my life around that area.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, to go from being surrounded by it, you know, in high school and college, and then have that social situation change. And
yeah, even at work, I can only think of one person that is Catholic out of 30 that I know. So, yeah, it was definitely a change for me for that. And then going to RCA with Veronica, hearing certain aspects of our faith, I guess just out loud, makes me think of, well, how would this sound from someone who isn't familiar with this stuff at all?
Yeah. What do you? How do you think someone would?
I don't know. Well, actually, I thought RCIA would start, you know, from the very basics. You know, if someone who is not raised Christian at all were to join, I would think they would start from the very beginning about what God is and that he has a son that was made man. But I guess they kind of gauge where people are coming from for the RCIA sessions. And so they, I don't know if it was on purpose, but they started assuming that everyone had a basic understanding of Christianity in general. So that surprised me a little bit because we didn't really start from scratch.
Oh, yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, there was this one podcast. It's Catholic Stuff You Should Know. And they were talking about how these two priests basically go back and forth. And they were talking once about how they would start out talking about, you know, how do you start out RCIA? And apparently many people say, like, oh, start out with Aquinas is proof for the existence of God. You know, like
many people say this.
Well, they were, you know, I guess. But no, that makes perfect sense because if you already have, if that's not the context, like if then you'll waste that session. Like if you don't need to be, if that's not a need of a person's spirituality or a group spirituality at that moment, then you wouldn't need to start there. You could start somewhere else.
Yeah, and I guess if someone's like already putting forth like the intentional effort to enter in formally to the Catholic Church, maybe they just assume like, well, people probably have some idea of what it is.
Yeah, I don't think people are walking in like, so tell me about this God.
Well, it does.
How do I join?
It starts with the inquiry sessions where go and you're just curious, I guess, and then it kind of rolls into the official RCIA process. So I think there is room for people that are genuinely just interested and maybe not anything further than that, and they are fine with that. They encourage that.
They did have us fill out like a questionnaire saying what our background was, kind of did we grow up knowing any, like having any religious influence, what religion, what denomination. So I think I know I had to fill it out, but I don't think Mick did. And I think there they ask you what you want to focus on, what major questions you may have about the faith. And they had everyone going into RCIA fill one of those out.
So what is it like for you, Veronica, to like, I don't know, how is it?
It's interesting. Mm-hmm. I think before I even started RCIA, I was already asking Mick a few questions in terms of why there were these certain beliefs that I may or may not have known about or believed or had a different stance on. And that's actually, I think, part of the reason that he started going with me a little more was because sometimes the answer was like, well, I don't know. It was just that's kind of what I was, you know, told growing up. So that was interesting. I think it also helps that in our classes we do have people from a lot of different denominations. So I think it helped kind of open up those conversations when people had questions about why things are a certain way. And I did appreciate the fact that it seems like they would use, what is it, the catechism?
Mm-hmm.
And the Bible and kind of try and go hand in hand and explain kind of at a pretty basic level why there are certain beliefs.
So to you, does the Catholic Church seem, to me, my impression of what other people think is that they think the Catholic Church is very like archaic and this huge institution with all these like rituals and a lot of like old guys and, you know, just like just a whole lot of not as connected or personal as maybe some, let's say like an evangelical church or something like that. Is that or was that some of your impression of Catholicism before or
it
now?
It was, and if I'm completely honest, it still kind of is. What I was used to was a very kind of warm community. And when I, you know, part of my family is Catholic, so Catholic religion isn't extremely unusual to me, something I didn't know growing up, but I just happened to go to Adventist church growing up. And even when I would go with, like, other family members to Catholic Church, it was very different. And just, I think, not even so much getting into the church service and, you know, the rituals of that, because I think any church will have those things. It just depends on how you see it. But it just didn't seem or feel quite as inviting. And we actually had the talks, I believe this year is the Year of Mercy, at the church with RCIA. They've been having talks for the church once a month. And instead of RCIA, we'll go to that with the whole church. And the last one was actually interesting, talking about outreach in the Catholic Church, their own parish to the community. And it was interesting to hear people go back and forth and see what they believed was outreach, if they thought it was enough, if it wasn't enough, and hearing the difference that I'm used to hearing in, you know, growing up Adventist. It still makes me a little uneasy, and I still kind of have that, well, it's interesting. It seems like they're, from the conversation, it seems very about yourself as opposed to a community, which is different for me.
It's interesting. We recently talked about the concept of mercy, because I didn't really know anything about the most I know about it is from Bri talking about it during the podcast. I didn't really know anything about it. I thought it was just, I thought honestly it was randomly chosen by Pope, or not, maybe it was randomly chosen to me, but Pope Francis was just like, okay, let's focus on mercy this year. I didn't know anything about it. Yeah. But
I think it's also interesting because we were talking in another podcast about Mass and our experiences with Mass and how some experiences of Mass have been very warm and inviting and others have been kind of cold and alienating, and struggling with that as Catholics too. You know, how do you struggle, you know, with that in a meaning, you know, the meaning with that. And then the other theme that you were talking about is sort of the tension between a personal relationship and a community. That's interesting too. And I wonder if that's, well, I don't wonder. I think that's largely cultural, right? I think the experience of a Catholic church in the Philippines, or I'm sure in many Latin American countries, is very much more communal than it can be sometimes, at least in my experience with many American churches, where, yeah, it's like the sign of peace and then people kind of just like awkwardly look at each other, you know, versus, you know, experiences of community where the community is already really well formed, and then church is another expression of that community. So, yeah, I mean, there are a variety of experiences that can happen.
Yeah, that's true. At St. Bernardine's, their sign of peace time, it's very long. Like, we're usually finished saying, you know, hello and shaking hands with everyone around us, and people will come up and give us hugs, and it still goes on, and Father Rich will be going down the aisle, and, you know, because it really is like a community, and those people, just like other parishes, I guess, but, you know, those people, I think, have such a history and a community, I don't know the word, they do things together more than just go to church together.
And I think it's similar to the Adventist church that Veronica grew up in, and everyone has known each other their whole lives, and they have like a Happy Sabbath greeting at the beginning. It's similar to our sign of peace, but it is also very long. Like, everyone goes around and says hi to each other. So it strikes me as, it reminded me of that when you said that. And also, they spend pretty much the whole day after church. They have lunch together and they do volunteer stuff, I guess.
Volunteer or just go to different families' houses, have fun nights. It just kind of, I was telling my growing up, going to church was like a whole day event. It wasn't just like, you know, going for the service and out. It was, you went to Sabbath school, you went to church, you went to fellowship dinner, and then it was like a whole lot of different things that you could be doing into the evening.
I'm like envious of that, you know, because even especially growing up, I mean, you've been to where we go to church, and there's a lot of, you know, as we've gotten older, I think there's, for me, there's been a lot of things that I now value about it, but, you know, at least for myself, I didn't feel particularly connected to our parish growing up. And I know that there were some people that were. They would do, like, youth, whatever, like, what, youth fellowship, or do, I don't know, I really don't know what they did because I didn't do it. But I know that they would, like, hang out or do something. But for me, I just didn't feel very connected. And then we would go to Sunday school, but then when we started going to Loyola, we didn't. I don't even know if there's Sunday. I have no idea if there's Sunday school for like high schoolers. And then I was, you know, we were there for
not after
confirmation and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm envious because I think in some ways, that's how, I don't know. I kind of think any community of similar faith, they should all be like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think what happens is, you know, a lot of priests, they get trained in the sacraments, right? They get trained in theology, which is important. I mean, that's all what keeps everything standardized. And, you know, the sacraments and the theology can help build community, but there's a separate set of skills involved in fostering community, you know, that involve, and these skills involve leadership and communication and outreach and meeting people where they are and understanding, you know, your parishioners' context. And, you know, I wonder, I mean, none of us are trained or have been to seminary, but I wonder how much of that happens in the seminary. I'm guessing very little, right? I don't think they have sort of like, okay, here's a class on community organization, right? Here's mm-hmm. a class on community development. You know, here's a class on, and yet at the same time, there are early apostles, and in fact, not just the early apostles, but I think all successful Christian communities, Catholic or otherwise, are centered around first and foremost the experience of community, right? And ritual developed as a way to preserve and continue that community, but it served the purpose of community. You know, it wasn't ritual for the sake of ritual, right? Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, sometimes it feels like it is, right? At the expense mm-hmm. of, maybe not at the expense of community, but sometimes it feels that the two are divorced, you know, that yeah. sense of ritual and that sense of community, when ideally they're not.
Yeah. Plus, I think, I mean, there's all kinds of seminarians, but I could easily see some young seminarian in his, you know, his 20s or something, and then all of a sudden he's like the pastor of a church, and there's all these community members, and they're looking to him as like the father.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, you could be the most charismatic 25-year-old ever, and I think it's still gonna probably be a little daunting, or an adjustment to be the one that people look to, you know, encourage community or something like that.
Yeah. Well, I'm just curious, sort of as a teacher, what's the structure of RCIA like? I mean, do you come in and are there lectures and how does it unfold?
So usually they will have kind of a topic that they want to go and talk about, mm-hmm. Whether it be confession or Easter and all the events that go with it. And they kind of lay it out as, they will tell you, hey, this is what we're going to talk about today. If you have any questions, of course, let us know throughout. But they will present a topic, usually kind of stop midway and gauge where everyone is, see if they have any questions. We can go off on tangents, but they will usually wrap it up and kind of say, you know, this was the presentation. What questions do you have, or what does it make you think about? Is it different? Is it what you expected? And everyone kind of chimes in. Sometimes when they don't want to, it's like any classroom, you have to, you know, it's like pulling teeth to get people to talk, but, they will, you know, usually open up and kind of make it so that it can be an open discussion, not so much, being talked at, more kind of a community discussion.
Have you guys gotten to know the other, attendants?
A little bit. And I think what's nice is we have actually a very small group. I think it must be 5 or 6 of us. And for one, like Mick will come with me, and then there's another couple that, they're married and they'll come together. And so it's nice to see, you know, you start to get to know kind of what everyone does, like, you know, what niche they fit in, why they got interested. And as we go through kind of the steps of getting initiated, we do have, steps or ceremonies we have to go to. So everyone's excited to see each other during those and kind of support each other. So I would say that everyone is definitely starting to get to know each other a bit.
Are you excited for the initiate? Is it like a baptism? Is mm-hmm. that what it is?
Mm-hmm. I am excited. I think it's, and apart from it being something like, personally, I think it's exciting because they're, especially at the church that we're at, they do seem warmer than many other churches, and they are constantly saying, you know, we're praying for you. When we've done the scrutinies or anything else in church, the members of the church will, you know, they'll always stop and ask you who you are and, you know, we're praying for you, this and the other. And it is nice to get that kind of support and feel that support.
Yeah. When we first moved to California, I was telling Brian the other week, there was a super charismatic priest at our church. He had been like a lawyer, like a career lawyer, and then I think something sort of tragic, I think something happened with his wife, and he ended up going into the priesthood. But, you know, he was like, he had like, looked like an older surfer. He had like blonde hair and walked down the aisle with a microphone and like was really like, really captured everyone's attention. But the first year we were there, we went to midnight mass for the Easter Vigil. I think it started around 10. It easily went past 12, maybe around 1. It was really long. Jen like did not like it. But the best part and probably the majority of the mass was when they, you know, baptized all the RCIA candidates. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they, I think they had like a robe, you know, like the, some like white garb. And there was like a little pool, almost like a sort of like a hot tub sized pool. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, went down in, and I think they, maybe they ducked down or maybe they sort of like wet themselves. And then he like put some water. But the thing is, the church was so loud. It was like a basketball or a game or something. It was like some sort of sports game. And everyone was like cheering. And this priest, like at the top of his lungs, maybe even with the microphone, he was like, "In the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit." And everyone was like cheering and clapping. It was like extremely moving to me. I was like, this is the best. It's, except that it was hours of this, you know, because I don't know however many there were.
Yeah.
But I had never seen anything like that. I don't remember seeing it at St. Joe's. And I just remember thinking like, man, this is how to do it. Like, I mean, I hope I'm not like setting up, you know, setting it up so you're disappointed for years, but I just thought it was great, you know.
Well, one of the ladies that sometimes presents to our sessions, mm-hmm. she was saying that like in the early church, you know, they would go through all this preparation and then finally when they were being baptized, they'd submerge themselves in this pool and they would come up and the first thing they would see are these mosaics of like Jesus, mm-hmm. and all the, you know, particularly important parts in salvation history. It just sounded awesome.
Yeah.
And I was wondering why we don't do full body baptisms aren't, I guess, more common. Because I guess you can do it, but it seems optional.
Yeah, it's a good question.
I would just guess that it has to do with like convenience.
Yeah, logistics.
Like, yeah, like, oh, well, it's going to be messy. And, I don't know. Unfortunately, I don't think I think it's probably more based on that. I don't know. Maybe it's not, but
I have been curious because in the Adventist church, they do have a baptismal and they do dunk people, as I like to say.
Yeah.
And I've seen it at other churches. I think they'll, if they don't have it, they'll like go on retreats and do it. So it is interesting. But
yeah, I mean, I think it goes back to really the main element being water. So anytime you have some kind of element that has significant you know, spiritual significance, you call it a sacramental. So water as a sacramental. Yeah, I mean, because if we're going to do it the way that, if we're going to go back scripturally, then you should go to the Jordan River.
Exactly.
You
know?
So it's, you know, you walk that line like, okay, well, if it can't be the Jordan River, then some river.
Yeah.
Well, if it's not a river, then at least full immersion. Yeah. And like, oh, well, at least you get some, long as you get some water on you. I think that's kind of how it goes. But no, I mean, obviously, and, you know, for the people that do go to the Jordan River to get baptized, that must be very meaningful as well. But I don't think the meaning, certainly not the spiritual meaning, is diminished by the amount of your body or the amount of water that is involved. In the Good. Well, do you guys have any other comments? Or
I actually have one last question. But I have a question because I asked Mick about this the other weekend. And Mick was like, oh, you know, I never knew anything about the Liturgy of the Hours. And then Brian was like, oh, yeah, the Liturgy of the Hours. And part of me was like, I've heard of it, but I don't know about it. So I've been meaning to ask you, Mick, or Veronica, what is the Liturgy of the Hours? I haven't had time to Wikipedia it.
I still don't. They didn't really explain. They talked about it. And in my mind, I took a note to look it up. And I did. But, yeah, there are a few things like that, like things that I just didn't know. And one was, I think Veronica missed these sessions, but there were a couple of times where the priest ran the RCIA session and did Lectio Divina, and that's where you read a Bible passage and everyone reflects on it for a while, and then you each say, you know, how it spoke to you. And everyone would say different things, and it was just, you know, how, I guess, we were being spoken to at that moment in our lives. And I always knew, like, when you go to church, sometimes you hear a gospel and a homily that really strikes you, and I always knew that, like, it spoke to people in different ways depending on where they were, but I never knew it was an official term or exercise.
Yeah, is it, I mean, is it, so when do people do it?
The Liturgy of the Hours?
No, Lectio Divina.
Lectio Divina.
He just kind of did it. I guess it was an exercise, a spiritual exercise.
Yeah. And Pope Benedict recommends
that you do it every day.
Oh, really? Yeah. Just by yourself?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It would be very interesting to hear, you know, have even, whatever, any group of people read the same passage and probably hear some pretty different things or meanings that come out of it.
Yeah.
It would be pretty cool.
People were saying, picking up different parts of the passage and things that had never even occurred to me that they had been reflecting on.
Yeah, it works on those, on multiple levels in that way. I mean, you can do it on your own, and you can be surprised just on your own that, oh yeah, why am I reflecting, or why does my mind keep treading over the same word or phrase? And that can be surprising, insightful just on its own. And then there's that second layer of insight and reflection that can come when you then share that with someone else and hear exactly that someone else has caught on to a particular phrase or idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So are you pretty familiar with the Catechism, the book?
We have a copy of it. Yeah. And they actually, through RCIA, they will tell you, read the certain chapter. Mm-hmm. We're going to hit on notes of this.
Wow.
And kind of come prepared if you have any questions.
Is it really? So are you making your way through the whole thing?
They gave us, I don't know if
they
it's the, like,
you a more accessible,
like, an abbreviated
version.
Okay. Yeah.
Version.
It's a more readable version.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think of it as like an instruction manual. Is it written like a book or more of like a
it's
manual?
No, it's written more like yeah, and like just passages. They'll have like quotes from different people that may have to do with whatever specific topic they're talking about then. And then like scripture passages that, you know, they kind of go back to and point to as to why they have this belief. And kind of give you a little bit of abbreviated history of where certain things may come from.
Cool. Yeah, it starts just following the Nicene Creed. So, I believe in God. And then it stops there and it discusses all that. I believe in one God. So then it talks about what is this one God that we believe, and how do you worship that one God, and what are offenses against believing, you know, in this one God.
Do you have a copy in your room? I think I may have seen it when you were still in the Philippines.
And it still is in the Philippines. Mick has a copy, and you can see it, Vatican.va, to access...
Oh, it's there.
The Complete Catechism of the Catholic Church. Or usccb.org, the U.S. Catholic Conference of Bishops website.
It's pretty comprehensive, but actually if you have a question about a certain topic and you're really curious, sometimes it's not comprehensive enough. But they have references like, I don't know, St. Augustine's paper on whatever, and then it can point you to where to find more information.
And even then, I mean, that's the interesting thing about it is as you go through it, there are times when it's very specific. Like this is, you know, very specifically what we should believe or what we should not believe. And then other places, as Mick is kind of saying, where you don't get the full answer and it's not specific. And sometimes there's a beauty in that too, because it leaves room for interpretation or leaves room for, you know, for a particular insight or... you know, idea to take root in different ways in different people.
Interesting. Well, I have to. I think I looked at it on Amazon one time, and I was like, I don't know if I want to buy this.
Yeah, it's a good resource to have. I think every household should have one, like a dictionary.
And then another thing that I had never really occurred to me: we were taking a kind of a church tour. Obviously, we've all been in a church, but Father Mark was kind of showing us what's really important during the Mass. And he was like, what are the three things you see on the altar? And everyone was like, or on the, I guess, at the front.
Oh, uh-huh.
And everyone was like, come on, there's only three. He's like, it's the altar, and then the chairs, and then the podium. What's the official name for it?
I would have gotten that wrong. I would have been like, the candle.
But supposedly, a big point of the Mass is that, one, that the priest is acting in place of Jesus Christ, and then two, that we're all called to be priest, prophet, and king like Jesus, and then so the priest part is the altar, the prophet part is the podium where the gospel and readings are read, and really only scripture I think should be read from that, and then the king is the chairs, which are like the throne.
Oh, that's cool.
So I thought, I never occurred to me.
The ambo?
Yeah.
Ambo. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ambo? Yeah, that's the podium.
Oh, I thought you're abbreviating it, like ambulance.
Yeah. Cool. Good stuff.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys.
Thanks for sharing your experiences.
Yeah. Once we post it up, feel free to share it with all your friends. We never have a good way to end. Anything you guys want to add?
No, I thought it was a good chat.
Yeah. Well, we're really excited. We are really excited for your wedding. I'm sorry, because I know probably everyone constantly is always talking to you just about the wedding, but we are very excited.
Not just for the wedding,
but, you know, you guys being together, not just for the wedding, but for what it represents as well.
Yeah.
So,
in terms of your relationship and in terms of your relationship with God.
Us too.
Yep. Both growing.
Good. All right. Well, come back, and we hope to have you guys again sometime.
Great. Thank you.